Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow is the Transgender Day of Visibility. This year's theme is resistance. With more visibility comes more understanding. Organizers say dire statistics about trans people can and will get better as trans people become more visible in our society. And here is a clip from the Transgender Day of Visibility event.
Loving a trans person is an act of resistance.
Loving yourself as a trans person is an act of resistance.
We need cis people to stand up for trans people.
Oh, it just cut off. Sorry about that. Well, we'll put the video up at our website, yourcallradio.org. Again, organizers say that the dire statistics that we've all been hearing about trans people can and will get better as they become more visible in our society. 8 trans people of color have been murdered so far this year. That's according to the New York City Anti-Violence Project. In the span of a week, 4 trans black women were murdered, 3 in Louisiana. Stabbed to death, Ciara McElveen was found in New Orleans' 7th Ward. 2 days before that, China Gibson was found shot to death in New Orleans, and Jaquarius Holland was found murdered in Monroe, Louisiana. Keke Collier was shot to death walking home in Chicago. Today's guest, Executive Director of the Transgender Law Center, Chris Hayashi, says that ever since Donald Trump was elected, they've seen an incredible increase in violence and harassment against trans people across the country. There's also been an increase in the number of anti-trans bills introduced in state legislatures across the country. The National Center for Trans Equality reports that state legislators have filed 42 bills explicitly targeting trans people. At the same time, trans people are more visible than ever. In January, 9-year-old Avery Jackson became the first trans girl to grace the cover of National Geographic. The entire issue was dedicated to what they call the gender revolution. Joining me to talk about the increasing threats to the rights and lives of trans people, but also growing awareness and visibility, are 2 guests. Chris Hayashi is Executive Director of the Transgender Law Center, an organization working to change law, policy, and attitudes so all people can live safely and free from discrimination, regardless of their gender identity or expression. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Claire Farley, Director of the Economic Development at the San Francisco LGBT Center. It's the first initiative in the country to address the economic barriers faced by low and moderate income LGBT individuals and their families. Claire advocates for increased visibility of LGBT communities, and her story is highlighted in several films on Netflix and National Geographic. Hi, Claire. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. Well, Claire, I feel like I kind of know you because I spent the morning watching a number of videos about you and your partner, mostly on National Geographic. And I was watching these videos and I thought, wow, you know, you're sharing so many details about your life, personal details. I know that you grew up in Missoula, Montana. You have a twin brother. And tomorrow's day, Transgender Day of Visibility, you know, really says that people who are more visible in our society, that'll result in more understanding. But I just wonder, what is it like for you to share so much about yourself to the world?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I feel like before I knew kind of what the consequence was, I'd already done it. So, I feel like there was definitely choice in it, but I didn't really realize when I did my first film on Netflix that it would become so big. And it was kind of before we had such visible representation from Laverne Cox and, you know, heroes like Janet Mock and other folks who were in the media doing the work. And so I think, you know, 10 years later, really seeing where we've come as a community, I think that with visibility has come change, and allies have been able to step up. But we've also seen that there's also an increased state of violence. And I think that the violence has been happening, it just hasn't been reported. And so really grateful to be on the air today to talk about it.
Well, we're grateful to have both of you. And Chris, same question to you. I also watched videos of you doing a lot of media interviews, and I just wonder what it's been like for you to focus really on your personal story and share that with the world.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great question. You know, I have been active in advocating and fighting for the rights of LGBT people, and specifically trans and gender nonconforming people, for a number of years now. And I just think there is incredible power in being able to share my story as a transgender person, as a transgender person of color. And we've seen that for transgender people, particularly transgender young people, to be able to share their stories and talk about their lives and, you know, what our realities are critical in being able to shift public understanding, consciousness, and support for transgender people, particularly in this moment when we've been under attack across the country, whether it's through the anti-trans legislation you were talking about or the ongoing violence and discrimination that our communities face.
Well, for people who have not seen your videos yet, but we will put them on our website, before we dive in and talk about the politics, why don't you give us a little snapshot of your story? So, Claire, as I said, you grew up in Missoula, Montana. You have a twin brother, and now you're married, and you're hoping to adopt. Have you been successful with that yet?
Yeah, actually, we're still in the process. It's a long process, and especially on a nonprofit salary, you can imagine adoption is expensive. Mm. So, you know, we're definitely still exploring. We have lots of pet babies. so right now, you know, that's our main focus. And then, you know, really focusing on my career. You know, my story, I think, you know, I'm lucky that I had some privilege in that my family was supportive and, you know, I've had access to education. You know, and I think where I've really been able to grow is that, you know, in my own employment journey, you know, I was fired when trying to access the restroom at my workplace that matched my gender identity and expression, and was told that I had to use a different restroom. And so I think that really helped spearhead my advocacy within workforce, is to really look at, like, this basic human need of access to public accommodation. And then working, you know, in collaboration with Chris and the team at Transgender Law Center, really to kind of shift and change these policies. And so, you know, I've been working now at the LGBT Center for 10 years, and it's really been an exciting opportunity to develop programs that really help get trans people back to work. And we just recently launched a campaign across all the San Francisco public transportation called Hire Trans, which demonstrates some really amazing photos and images of trans people who are working. And so I think we also have to share those stories of success, as Chris mentioned, so that we're really lifting up the visibility that, you know, there is opportunity, there is hope, and that trans people can really do anything.
You said you were fired at your first job for wanting to use the women's bathroom?
Yeah, I was working for a major Whole Foods retailer, and they refused to let me use the bathroom that matched my gender identity and expression when I came out. And so I tried to go through the whole appeal process. At the time, there were some local ordinances in the city that I was living in, but I wasn't aware enough around my rights and how to pursue it. Mm. And it wasn't until I came to San Francisco and met the TLC team that I really understood that, you know, I could have done more to protect myself.
How common is that? I mean, we hear about the difficulties that trans people have in finding employment, but how common is it to be fired for something as simple as wanting to use the bathroom?
Yeah, I think Chris can speak to this too, but, you know, I think we find that 90% of trans people experience harassment in the workplace. You know, trans people are 3 times as likely to be unemployed than the general population, 4 times for trans people of color. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think especially during the recession, we saw that trans people were the first to be laid off, and you know, the last to be rehired. So, you know, I think there's often this myth of LGBT affluence, and so often the needs or the economic justice needs of the trans community kind of gets roped up in that. But, you know, the community is not made up of cis white men. You know, we're talking about trans people of color who are forced to work within street economies or, you know, to take minimal paid jobs to try to survive. And our communities are really getting pushed out of San Francisco, which is, you know, meant to be the heart and soul of what makes a community diverse. So I think we really need to start thinking about not only, you know, folks who are working who get fired, but also this broader push of how do we actually create a diverse workforce when marginalized communities aren't allowed access to those opportunities.
That is Claire Farley. Claire is Director of Economic Development at the San Francisco LGBT Center. And Chris Hayashi is Executive Director of the Transgender Law Center. Chris, before we dive in and talk about policy with you, you have spent the last 13 years advocating for the rights of transgender and gender nonconforming people. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Sure. You know, I grew up in Seattle, Washington, and I was this very gender non-conforming Asian kid and faced a lot of harassment in school from peers as well as teachers as I was growing up. And, you know, so from a very young age, I understood that the world was not set up for me to survive as a very gender non-conforming young person of color. And unfortunately, that reality is still true today. I mean, when I was growing up, that was a good, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, right? And unfortunately for trans and gender nonconforming youth, particularly youth of color, they continue to face harassment, discrimination, and violence in school. In fact, 78% of trans and gender nonconforming youth report facing harassment in school, and to the point where it results in 1/6 of those young people actually being pushed out of school and unable to access an education, which we know is so critical. And to the point that Claire was raising before, you know, without an education, it puts trans and gender nonconforming young people in a place where it is so much more challenging to access employment, to access income, to really be able to survive and to live their lives. And, you know, similar to Claire, I, you know, for many, many years, I, as a transgender person, I went without access to healthcare that I needed to just live my life and to be well. And it wasn't until I moved to California just 3 years ago, actually, that I actually had my health care as a transgender person covered under my insurance and was able to fully access that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, also for most transgender people across the country, access to health care that we need to be well continues to be a critical need.
Let's talk about where we are right now, because doing research and reading about this issue, on one hand, you see, and I got the issue of National Geographic in January that was entirely dedicated to what they're calling the gender revolution. And on the cover was 9-year-old Avery Jackson, the first trans girl to grace the cover. And there's such a debate and a conversation on social media. I mean, I got lost watching videos last night of trans people telling their stories. National Geographic has done so many, BuzzFeed. I mean, just it's incredible the amount of information you can find and people telling their own stories. But at the same time, this year you have 8 trans women who have been murdered so far this year. And then the National Center for Trans Equality reports that state legislatures have filed 42 bills explicitly targeting trans people. So when you look at all of this, Claire, I mean, there's so many amazing things that are happening and then so many devastating things that are happening. So how do you see where we are right now?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question, you know, and I think it's kind of reflecting the state of the country, you know, across so many intersectional issues of, you know, race and immigration and healthcare and now climate climate control, you know, and rights. So, you know, I think this issue, like so many others, is, you know, being put up to test. And across the board, LGBT, anti-LGBT legislation is being pushed across the country. You know, and so I think what this has been for us is a reminder that this type of oppression has been happening in our country, and that we've kind of become to a point where we got a little bit safe or not as reliant on pushing these issues. And I think it's really a reminder that this type of legislation, if we don't continue to push for the need for it and for protections of marginalized communities, then these wide sweeping policies can be tried to be pushed through. I think, you know, obviously Chris can speak to more of the logistics because they're doing this work every day, but I can speak from how this is implementing and impacting the community is that, you know, folks are feeling more resilient than ever to really work to resist this. And I think we're really trying to think, how can we do this as a community, you know, whether it's working together against women for women's rights or working across violence against people of color. So I think that we can't stay idle, that we really have to work collectively as a community of all oppressed people, because this can't be a one fight. You know, this can't be just a trans rights fight or an LGBT fight or a women's fight or an immigration fight. We all need to work together to make sure that this type of policy doesn't bring us backwards 10, 15, 20 years in the work of liberation that we've all been working for.
Claire Farley is Director of Economic Development at the San Francisco LGBT Center. This is the first initiative in the country to address economic barriers faced by low and moderate income LGBT individuals and families. And Chris Hayashi is Executive Director of the Transgender Law Center, an organization working to change law, policy, and attitudes. And today, we are talking about trans rights. Tomorrow is the Trans Day of Visibility, and this year's theme is resistance. Organizers say with more visibility comes more understanding. What are your thoughts? I mean, so many things have changed over the last 10, 15 years. The PBS NewsHour was doing a segment on a trans safe house in Washington, D.C., and the woman who runs the safe house said, 15 years ago, I would not feel comfortable walking outside my front door. And now, I'm comfortable screaming to the world that if you need a safe place to stay, we have your back. So what changes have you seen over the years? How do you assess where we are right now? If you're trans and you have a story to share, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you have someone who's trans in your community or family, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And what about you, Chris? How do you assess where we are today?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important question. So, you know, what I can add to what Claire shared is that, I mean, the overall picture, right, is that we have seen this incredible increase in visibility for the trans community, with more and more celebrities like Laverne Cox being really, really visible. And at the same time, we know that the reality for the majority of transgender people, particularly for transgender people of color, is that people are really struggling to survive on a daily basis. And we've already spoken to some of those realities around employment and education and healthcare. The reality also is that our community continues to face incredible violence. I mean, we've already talked about the incredible number of murders that have already happened this year alone. And our community continues to face violence and harassment and assault from the police, often simply for walking while trans. 47% of Black trans and gender nonconforming people have experienced incarceration due to the discrimination, the lack of access to employment, the lack of access to education. And once incarcerated, 60% of transgender women report being sexually assaulted while incarcerated. So the reality is that we have seen this increase in visibility, and our community continues to struggle to survive on a daily basis and face incredible violence. And what we've seen in recent years, as far as law and policy, is also this mix where we have had major legal advances for the transgender movement. It has been made absolutely clear that transgender people are protected from employment discrimination under Title VII, that transgender students are protected from discrimination under Title IX. There have been incredible advances as far as law and policy. And what we've seen in recent years is also this onslaught of anti-trans legislation. So these bathroom ban bills that basically make it illegal for transgender people to use the bathroom matching our gender, sometimes levying fines and bounties, sometimes jail time. And, you know, in 2015, we saw maybe a few states propose this legislation. In 2016, we saw over a dozen states proposing anti-trans legislation, proposing these bathroom bills. And here in 2017, we are again seeing state after state proposing this anti-trans legislation. You know, some of the ones that I think it's critical to raise up, because we are, as a movement, in an ongoing struggle to protect our rights in states across the country. So, for example, in Texas, there's a huge fight happening right now to prevent a bathroom bill from moving forward. It's already gone to the Senate and will be in the House soon. And transgender people and our allies across the state of Texas and across the country are organizing and fighting to stop that legislation and stop legislation happening in a number of other states, from Washington State, which is possibly facing a ballot initiative.
Wow.
Opponents in that state are currently collecting signatures to put an initiative on the ballot that would advance discrimination against the transgender community. And people are organizing, are out on the streets fighting back to try to prevent that from happening.
And that's in the state of Washington.
Yes, yes.
So this is happening across the country.
Yeah, it's happening across the country. I mean, there are already a dozen states that have specific bathroom ban legislation that they've tried to move forward or is currently in play.
What explains the increase in legislation at this time?
I think it's a mix of things. I mean, one is that there has been this increase in visibility, and that also we've had advances as far as transgender rights, but also broadly for the LGBT community. And I think what we are seeing is a clear backlash. That is not new. I mean, our community was already facing these types of attacks, the discrimination. It's just now in this form of these bathroom ban bills that we are seeing all across the country.
And before we go to break, I'd like to get your take on this, Claire. How do you explain the increase in these bathroom bills across the country? I'm sure a lot of people are thinking Washington State. That sounds kind of surprising that a state like Washington would put that kind of legislation forward.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point. I mean, I think that we're kind of, as Chris mentioned, in a backlash moment. I think with more visibility, I think folks who are against human rights are more vocal. And I think we also have to look at our leadership. I mean, who we voted into office or who part of the country voted into office is a wake-up call for the racism, the homophobia, the transphobia that exist. And so I think that if we look at who our political leaders are and we don't hold them accountable to human rights and justice, across all communities, regardless of who you are, then this type of action trickles down to our cities and our states. So I think that's where we were not diligent enough as a community and for allies to really step up and say, okay, yes, I have privilege, or yes, I have opportunity, but with that privilege comes the responsibility to take action and really step up for trans student rights and for all trans people.
Claire Farley is Director of Economic Development at the San Francisco LGBT Center, and Chris Hayashi is Executive Director of the Transgender Law Center. And we are marking the Trans Day of Visibility that takes place tomorrow. This year's theme is resistance, and you can find more information about events that are happening all across the country. There's also a number of videos of people telling their stories. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org. Or if you prefer to tweet us, do so at Your Call Radio. Coming up at 11 is the BBC Newsroom live from London, followed at 11:30 by BBC Health Check. Stay with us.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. This week, the House voted to revoke an Obama-era privacy rule, which required internet providers to ask for your permission before they could sell your browsing history to the highest bidder. Well, the Senate has already passed it. The House passed it. It just came really quickly. Most people didn't even see this coming until the Senate was about to vote on it. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. We'll also discuss the ongoing extensive coverage of the investigation into Russia's interference in the U.S. election. How should reporters cover this story? That's tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Tomorrow is the Transgender Day of Visibility, and this year's theme is resistance. Organizers say that the dire statistics that we hear, like 8 trans people of color have been murdered so far this year already, those stats will hopefully get much better as trans people become more visible in our society. And if you'd like to take part in today's conversation, if you have a story to share, if you're trans, if you care about someone who's trans, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Or if you have a question for today's guest, Claire Farley, Director of Economic Development at the San Francisco LGBT Center, and Chris Hayashi, Executive Director of the Transgender Law Center, we'd love to hear from you. And if you'd like to talk about where we are today, we've got these dire stats. At the same time, National Geographic dedicated its entire addition to the gender revolution in January with 9-year-old Avery Jackson on the cover. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Tex in San Francisco. Hi, Tex. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, Claire. I've been a client of your service, and it's nice to hear you on the radio. I have a question for Chris. I'm a transgender filmmaker here in San Francisco, and I'm wondering what the ramifications would be if transgender Americans went on a tax strike until we obtained equal human rights in our country.
Thank you, Tex. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, this is just a moment where I think that transgender people all across the country are moving different strategies and different actions to try and fight for our rights. And I think we're all really trying to think, like, what are the actions we can take that can really both protect our rights and advance our rights in this moment. So, you know, I mean, I think it's a really interesting idea and would be something worth looking into and researching.
And at this point, what would you say is most effective, Chris, for the trans community and allies to stand up and say, you know, these bills are unacceptable? I mean, people want to go to the bathroom. I mean, what's most effective at this point?
Right. The reality is that transgender people all across the country for decades have been fighting for our rights. We've been building community, and we've been keeping each other safe. Mm-hmm. And it's those strategies that I think are as important in this moment, and even more so. I think it's also important to raise up that, you know, in addition to all of the anti-trans legislation that we've seen happening in the last couple of years, that we are also in this moment with a new administration, right? Yeah. And we have seen that the Trump administration is about discrimination, is about hate, and that is what he campaigned on and has made true, even in, you know, this first period that he's in office. And that really every attack that he's moved, whether it's against immigrants, whether it's against healthcare, whether it's against transgender young people, all of those are attacks on the transgender community. And this is a moment where we are seeing across the country transgender people working together with our allies to make sure that people have access to services that they need to survive, that people have access to spaces and communities in order to make sure that they are able to live and to thrive in this moment where we're facing such incredible attack. And particularly being here in the Bay Area, there are such incredible organizations, from ELLA that works in the mission with trans Latinas to the Transgender Intersex Justice Project in San Francisco that works with transgender people who are incarcerated. And then, you know, in states across the country, from New Orleans, with has this incredible group called Breakout that is specifically trans youth of color, people are organizing and resisting and also moving services to make sure that people have what they need to survive.
And according to the National Conference of State Legislatures, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear its first case on trans issues. At the center of this case is Gavin Grimm, a high school student who's been battling with his local school board in Gloucester, Virginia, for the right to use the boys' bathroom. Is this case going to make it to the Supreme Court, Chris? And do you know when we can expect it?
So actually, the Supreme Court maybe a couple of weeks ago announced that they were sending Gavin's case back down to the Fourth Circuit. Mm. So and that happens at times. And so we are clear that the law protects transgender students from discrimination under Title IX. That has been proven in court, case after case. And we actually are representing a young boy, transgender boy, whose case was just heard before the Seventh Circuit, who, very similar to Gavin, you know, was just trying to go to school and to get an education, and his school singled him out for discrimination, wouldn't let him use the boys' bathroom, and took it a step further and actually was requiring transgender students in the school to wear green wristbands so they could better monitor their bathroom use. So, but the reality also of what the Supreme Court did in sending that case back, really just a week after the Trump administration had rescinded the trans student guidance, was also send a clear message to transgender students in this country that while the law protects transgender students, that the current administration, that the Trump administration, particularly in the rescinding of the trans student guidance, does not value them and will not protect them.
Do you think that ultimately one of these cases will make it to the Supreme Court?
You know, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Claire, about the murders that have happened so far this year. 8 trans people of color have been murdered. And when you look up their stories, they tend to get a lot of coverage in the LGBT media, not surprisingly. I wonder what your thoughts are on how these stories are reported in the mainstream national media.
Yeah, that's such a great question. You know, I think part of the reason why these stories aren't being told in national media is because national media isn't telling the stories of black and brown people being murdered in our country, or falsely incarcerated, or the police violence that's happening. So I think, you know, it's because there's a trend of not covering these issues. And I think, you know, to Chris's point, trans people are covered under Title IX, and so I feel like this issue in the media is actually being used to distract us from the violence and the oppression that's happening. You know, and I think for the administration, it's more useful to focus on, you know, these particular issues of bantering back and forth around bathroom access. Well, you know, we lose immigration rights, well, we lose women's rights, well, trans people of color are being murdered. And in reality, you know, this type of violence has been happening. It's just, you know, only being reported from some outlets. So I do agree that it needs to be shared. And I think as you hear and learn of these women's stories, you know, they're all doing such inspirational work. And, you know, I think what we need to do now is share their stories. And TDOV is all about love and resistance and really sharing out why trans people's lives matter.
What are your thoughts on this, Chris? How these stories are told are not told in the national mainstream media?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with Claire. I mean, I think it's been incredible to see the ways in which our stories are being covered by national media, by mainstream media, in a way that really we have not seen before. And I do agree, I do think that there are communities who are not as represented in this visibility. You know, we've spoken about the murders of transgender women of color in this country. You know, 2016, we saw the most reported murders that we know of. And, you know, that story isn't one that has had the level of visibility that other stories have. Transgender immigrants, you know, particularly in this moment of this new administration that has made so clear its intent and actions to attack the immigrant community, transgender immigrants face incredible violence, harassment, and assault when in detention. In fact, transgender immigrants make up 1 in 500 people in detention, yet make up 1 in 5 cases of reported sexual assault. And again, that's just reported sexual assault. So I think those stories that are really about some of the communities within the transgender community who are most targeted for violence, discrimination, and harassment are often the stories that we don't hear. And I also don't think we hear as much about the incredible resistance, leadership, and power that transgender people and organizers all across the country have been moving for many, many decades, you know, from living legends like Miss Major, who has been fighting for the rights of transgender people, for the rights of all people, for her entire life. Like, those stories are the stories that are not as elevated in mainstream media as others.
Hmm. Tell us about a few other stories that stand out for you that you think deserve more attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think another area is that transgender people, particularly transgender women of color, face incredibly high rates of HIV. At TLC, we have a project called Positively Trans, which is led by transgender people who are living with HIV. And that group did a report on the first ever actual report on transgender people living with HIV and the realities that community faces. And in fact, for Black transgender women, the possibility of getting HIV is 1 in 2. So the statistics are incredibly high, and those are stories that are often not told.
Wow. Claire, what about you? What stories would you like to highlight that you think deserve more attention?
Yeah, you know, I'm really honored for TDOV, Trans Day of Visibility, tomorrow for our San Francisco event. We're honoring 5 awardees. And, you know, our Emerging Leader Award is going to Aria Saeed, who's the program director at St. James Infirmary. And she's doing incredible work both around mobilizing around policy, but also working to lift up the rights of trans women of color and making sure that all people, especially low-income folks, have access to health care. So really excited to give her that award tomorrow. And then also, you know, I think looking to what Chris mentioned around immigration and ICE, recently there was a woman who was, you know, at the courthouse trying to access kind of a restraining order for domestic violence, and she was picked up with ICE and detained. You know, and so I think that stories like that, you know, and I recently got a call from a wonderful woman from North Carolina who was willing to walk from North Carolina to San Francisco. She had calculated the miles and was aware that she could get to San Francisco within 2 months if she walked, you know, nearly 10 miles a day. And it was just those kind of incredible stories of resiliency that, you know, I think Chris mentioned, you know, keeps me in the work and keeps me energized.
Wow. Claire Farley is Director of Economic Development at the San Francisco LGBT Center, and Chris Hayashi is Executive Director of the Transgender Law Center. And tomorrow is the Trans Day of Visibility. This year's theme is resistance. Organizers say dire statistics about trans people can and will get better as they become more visible in our society. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you have a question or a comment or a story to share, we'd love to hear from you. You both have brought up trans immigrants, and this is so interesting because in some ways, it's like, wow, people who are trans immigrants in this political climate are getting hit twice. I mean, we've done so many shows about immigration and the fear in immigrant communities, and I've been thinking a lot about how words really matter. And recently, the journal JAMA Pediatrics published a study that showed that the number of teen LGBT suicide attempts decreased in states where same-sex marriage became legal, which makes sense, but it makes you think about how especially young people, trans people, LGBT people, are affected by words, by negative comments, racist comments, you know, hurtful comments coming from politicians. You hear it on the radio all the time. Can you talk about that, Claire?
Yeah, you know, I think that's such a great point, you know, in how the messaging of, you know, as Chris mentioned, that, you know, our trans people care for, our trans students care for, and I think the negative messaging is impacting the community. As soon as the student, you know, the student rights ban came forward, I heard from countless people with just complete fear saying that, you know, trans students are going to die from this.
Wow.
And, you know, that is what I think hurts the heart the most, is that, you know, here we are working on lifting the visibility of a community, and we're talking about kids here, like 6, 7, 11, 12, of these young people like Gavin who are just trying to go to school, get an education, go to prom like anyone else. And so I think what we really are wanting to do, and I think what we are doing, is lifting up these stories, because I think as a community, if we get to know trans people, if you get to know us, then you will love us. And I think that's where the love and resistance movement is going.
And Chris, when I said hear it on the radio all the time, I just mean that when there's a story about a bathroom bill, for example, inevitably there's someone from the religious community that comes on and talks about why they think people should not be able to go to the bathroom that matches their gender. And I just wonder, what is this doing to a young person?
Absolutely. I think that that is also one of the stories that doesn't get lifted up as much, is that all of the anti-trans legislation that we have seen, all of the attacks that we've seen coming down from the new administration, that all of those, both policy and legislative attacks, in addition, have a real impact on the day-to-day reality of transgender people, including transgender young people. You know, we've heard all across the country about increases in violence and harassment that transgender people have faced, increases in discrimination, both as a result of the onslaught of kind of anti-trans legislation that we've seen, but also as a result of all the attacks coming down from the new administration. And I think a piece of this story that is important to raise up is the incredible transgender and gender nonconforming young people all across the country who are speaking out, who are fighting for their rights in their schools, who are organizing with other young people in this moment. And TLC has a partnership actually with the GSA Network, which is a national organization that's also based here in the Bay Area. The project's called Truth. It's a trans youth storytelling and national leadership and organizing project. And, you know, that group issued a statement after the Trump administration rescinded the trans student guidance and after the Supreme Court chose not to hear Gavin Grimm's case, that was just incredibly powerful. And I just want to read a little bit of it because I just think that the voices of transgender young people themselves are also the voices that are often not heard and are often not raised up in this moment. Part of their statement they wrote said, "Even for us, the emotional weight of surviving is immense. To the trans youth in this country who are hurting today, we are here for you. The education system has always been a battleground for students like us, but the brilliance of transgender youth resistance will never be stopped. Hmm. It is okay to feel hurt, to feel angry, to feel afraid. Know that we are all worthy of love and resources. We are all valuable. We are strong."
Well, those are powerful, and I think what's incredible right now because of social media and video is that so many young people are sharing their stories. Parents are sharing their stories. The sisters and brothers of trans people are sharing their stories. And Claire, to end on a sort of a positive note, just because of the awareness that's happening, I mean, the PBS NewsHour, I think it was a year ago, they did a whole series on trans rights. And they did 10-minute pieces, amazing pieces about safe houses, about just different things that are happening across the country. And then again, I talked about the National Geographic cover story. But it's just things are really changing. And social media is also changing. I mean, there's some, you know, really, I mean, you're putting yourself out there, which is very brave because some of this stuff is pretty awful. But people are able to tell their own stories because of the media world that we live in today.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point, you know, and I think for us, you know, we're really looking at TDOV as a launching off point across the country to really get allies involved. So really encouraging everyone, you know, if you're an ally, you know, step up and do the work, you know, share and repost your love for trans people, hashtag trans love, TDOV 2017. And I think it's really your chance, whether it's a coworker, a parent, a sibling, to really show your support for trans and gender nonconforming people. And together we can really, really make change.
And what would you add, Chris?
Yeah, you know, I would echo that and say that this is a moment of crisis. It's not a new crisis for the transgender movement. And for transgender people all across the country, this is a moment where we need to fall into the resilience and strength that we have always held, and that for our allies who seek to support trans rights, that there are so many different ways to get engaged in this moment. And in fact, at TLC, you know, we are calling for lawyers, for community members who want to be part of this movement to join us.
And final thoughts on the public's understanding of these issues and the best way people can be allies. Chris?
I think it's stories like this. I mean, I think that this is a moment where it calls on our allies to really do the work to learn about the transgender community, to learn about the transgender movement from listening to broadcasts like this, to looking at all of the media, to all of our websites, this is really a moment where we're calling on people to embrace that knowledge.
And Claire, we have about a minute left.
Yeah, I would say go out there, do the work, resist, and, you know, check out TDOV.org and join the movement. So excited.
Claire Farley is Director of Economic Development at the San Francisco LGBT Center, the first initiative in the country to address the economic barriers faced by low and moderate income LGBT individuals and their families. And Chris Hayashi is Executive Director of the Transgender Law Center, an organization working to change law, policy, and attitudes. And again, tomorrow is the Trans Day of Visibility. There will be events all across the country. And organizers say with more visibility comes more understanding. And speaking of visibility, Chris and Claire, next time we do a show, we'd love to have you in studio.
Yes, we'd love to be in studio. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope tomorrow's a success. Thanks for coming on and sharing your stories.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you can find more information about tomorrow's Trans Day of Visibility at yourcallradio.org. And coming up on tomorrow's Your Call, it is our media roundtable. We're going to talk about a vote. The Senate and the House have already passed a bill to revoke an Obama-era privacy rule, which required internet providers to ask for your permission before selling your browsing history to the highest bidder. Telecom companies like AT&T and Verizon lobbied to kill privacy protection rules, so we'll talk about that. We'll also discuss the ongoing extensive coverage of the investigation into Russia's interference in the U.S. election. How should reporters cover this story? What do we know and what don't we know? That is tomorrow. Your Call is produced here at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Stephanie Purcell is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David Latulipe is our studio engineer. You can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.